Morning.
All right. I hope you are. I trust you are.
Me? Yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right. It's another Monday. Monday, Monday. I hate Mondays. I don't particularly hate Mondays. It's funny you mention that, though. There was a story in the news. Probably won't bother getting into it, but it was about that girl. That girl who shot a load of people. It was in the 70s or maybe the very early 80s. Some young girl shot a load of people outside of school. She's mad, of course. She was asked, why'd you do that? And she just said, I hate Mondays. Like Garfield. All right, it's Monday. It's just ticked past 8 in the AM, British Summer Time, on the 13th. 13th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. You are the glorious band, the chosen few. My band of brothers and sisters, the very best among us, the best people on earth, basically. You're tuning in live to the Bo Show, Breakfast with Bo. There it is, Breakfast with Bo. The Bo Show. Bo's Breakfast Club, hashtag the real BBC. Lotus Breakfast Club, hashtag the real LBC. I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. As always, how are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, I'm all good.
Good, good. Should we jump straight into it then, with no further ado? Let's stop faffing about. Jump straight into it, shall we? All right. What's the legacy corporate mainstream media? What's Fleet Street banging on about this morning? What are they lying to you about by omission, if nothing else? All right, we've got PM refuses to join blockade. Mr. Trump has declared a blockade of the Straits of Hormuz, a US one. So Iran and the US both blockading it. It's due to come in force today, 10 a.m. Eastern time, which is 3 p.m. British Summer Time. Starmer's not interested in joining that. Although there are reports that the Royal Navy is going to send at least one or two sort of mine-sweeping type ships. So largely the policy is still, it's not our war, we're not interested, we're not going to help. But also, might do a bit. But okay, PM refuses to join blockade and Hungary enters new era. Viktor Orban of Hungary has lost an election after 16 years of ruling Hungary. So that's in the papers quite a lot this morning, so we'll talk all about that. We'll talk all about that. All right, let's kick off with the Tory graph, the Daily Telegraph. There was some sort of Olivier Awards for acting and things at the Royal Albert Hall. And that absolute despicable, obnoxious cretin, Rachel Zegler, won an award, apparently. There you go. I think Hollywood's not really interested in casting her much anymore because she's so difficult to work with. Which is a way of saying you're unbearable. Absolutely unbearable. And her politics are insane. Okay. PM refuses to join blockade of Hormuz. This is the thing, a reoccurring theme we'll have today. Trump to deploy US Navy to Strait, but Britain will only supply minesweepers. So there you go. The idea that it's just a blanket, we're not getting involved in anything. Not quite the case. I mean, largely. But look, as you see there, Britain will supply minesweepers. Whether we'll try and sail them there and they'll break down before they get there. Like HMS Dragon, Enter the Dragon, tried to sail to Cyprus and broke down before it got there. It's only a mild breakdown. It will get there. But anyway, okay. So that's a big thing in the news. We'll talk about that more as we go through the hour. Mr. Trump's blockade. All right. Because, well, one of the things, one of the key points just to say, is that Iran are talking about, aren't they? Iran are talking about how they are going to charge a toll. Anyone that goes through the Straits of Hormuz will have to pay them, the Iranians, a load of money. I was going to say $2 million. That's a number that gets bandied around. You might see a lot reported $2 million. But who knows what? They can charge whatever they like, can't they? Trump and the State Department. No. Telling everyone, for a start, don't pay that. If you pay that to them, you're in trouble with us now. You've got our answer to us now. So don't pay that. That's a ridiculous thing. We'll blockade it. We'll open it up by force now if needs be. Because that's, we can't have that. We can't have Iran doing that. Okay. little bit of the geography, quickly to say. There's the Straits of Hormuz there, right? That waterway between the promontory of land that sticks out from the south, which, even though it's the UAE, it's the United Arab Emirates all the way along there. The final promontory bit of land, I believe, belongs to Oman, not the Emirates. Anyway, there's that side of the Straits, the sort of western or southern side of the Strait. And that's where, all round there, that's where Iran have laid mines, sea mines. In other words, if you can imagine, if you do want to pass through the Strait, you can't do it on that side of it. It's too dangerous. No one will insure your ship to do that. So if you do want to pass through it, you've got to basically skirt right along the northern or eastern side of it, i.e. right very, very, very close to Iranian territory, the Iranian shore. So that if they want to stop you or blow you up, it's simplicity itself for them to do that. Because even though it's a quite narrow waterway, it's not that narrow. What is it, 10, 15, 20 miles at its narrowest? So that's still, you know, still not insignificant stretch of water in width. But now it's effectively been narrowed massively, though, by the mines. All right, the US are going to, saying, they're going to clear that area of mines. And they've got, as you can imagine, the US military, they've got everything they need and contingencies on everything they need. They've got whole parts of the US Navy that are just for that. Just ready to rock and roll with that. I saw one report, I think they're based in like Carolina or something, the Carolinas. Anyway, guys specially trained, ships specially outfitted to do that. And according to some reports, it will only take a few days. I asked that question to the ether a few weeks ago. I wonder how long it takes to clear an important enough area of the Straits of Hormuz of sea mines. Whether that takes just a few hours or whether that's a process that could take months or years. You know, like clearing the French and Belgian countryside of munitions from World War One. It's still not finished to this day. Still not done. Or whether, like I say, you do a couple of back and forths on the ships and it's clear. Well, anyway, a report I was watching over the weekend, very interesting guy, ex-Navy guy, obviously seemed to know exactly what he's talking about, says it will take a few days, you know, maybe as much as a week or something. But in other words, most important, most insane thing about all of that is that it won't take months and months and months or years, so... We'll see how it all plays out. If Iran's missile and drone capability, you know, it'll test that, won't it? Exactly how depleted it is. Because Hegseth and the Pentagon say it's massively... They keep saying decimated. And obviously they're using it in a much more sort of colloquial sense, aren't they? Because technically a decimation is only 1 in 10. So Hegseth says... Iran's missiles and drones have been decimated. What, so they've still got 9/10 of everything? Surely you mean more than that. I think you mean more than that, don't you, Pete? I think he does. I'm sure he does. So when they say decimated, they just mean massively, massively depleted, don't they? Well, if the United States start sending big chunks of their navy in there, in and around there, sitting ducks, effectively, we shall see, won't we? We shall see how depleted, how decimated... Iran's missile and drone arsenal is, won't we? We shall see. I would have thought the United States wouldn't. That's why they've held off on it for so long. It's because they're sort of waiting for it to be truly sort of almost completely wiped out. Why haven't they sent US Navy ships through there, up there before now? Well, almost certainly because they're not completely convinced, completely happy with the level of depletion. But now you would think they are, otherwise they wouldn't be doing this, you would think. But we'll see. Stuff might start going down today, 10 a.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. BST. US ships getting hit by things, maybe, like this afternoon. Don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. Okay, let's move on. Another big story, perhaps the second biggest story on Fleet Street, is EU rules to be imposed on Britain under Labour plans. Starmer and his government want to take us closer to Europe again, don't they? They always hated, despised Brexit, didn't they? Hated it with a passion. Did everything through the kitchen sink at trying to not make it happen. Even the Tories, right? Even the Tories. Theresa May sort of couldn't get it done. And then Boris gets some crappy half deal. And then everyone from then onwards still didn't really implement it properly. Never lent into it. Never really got behind it. And of course, Labour. Of course, the Labour government. Do everything they can politically to undo it, unravel it in various ways. I'm sure if he thought he had the political capital or the backing of the country, he'd just entirely undo it. Well, he's made the calculation that doing that is not exactly possible. But what he will do is just in a sneaky, underhanded, dirty way, undermine it in any way he can. So here we're talking, it's mainly about the single market. The rules that govern the single market in the EU, which don't apply to us now. That's the whole point of Brexit. Well, not the whole point, but it was one of the main things, of course. Other than immigration, but we still got the Boris wave anyway, didn't we? That'll be in the news. That's in the news. Talk about that in a moment. But this is sort of more economic things, the single market. Starmer wants us, Britain, to abide by all those rules. Then what was the point of it all? It's so bizarre to me how you wouldn't want your country to be sovereign. It's so bizarre. People in Parliament don't want Parliament to be sovereign. Make that make sense. That you want foreign courts that you have no say over who sits on those courts, that you want those to set precedent for your laws. Why would you want that? Well, unless you hated your country and yourself. Unless you wanted that. What else explains it? So to be clear for Brexit people, this is still only plans. Search every part of that parliament, I want those plans. It's only in the planning stage. So it's not like it's just happened. We're now effectively back in the single market. It's not that. Their plans, and it'll have to go through parliament. So it's still not happened yet. And we know Sir U-turn, Sir Chris Darling, the U-turn master extraordinaire. Perhaps enough pressure can be put on him from his backbenchers, from the opposition, from the country at large, from the media, that he just does a U-turn. Says that a lot, doesn't he? Enough pressure and he collapses like a house of cards. But nonetheless, they've shown their hand, they've shown their true colours. I see your true colours. He hates this country. And the popular will that we aren't a part of the single market and don't belong to Europe. We're not in the pocket of Brussels and Strasbourg. He's a scumbag, absolute scumbag. Okay, here's a story about the NHS. NHS patient survival rates among worst in developed world. Right. Okay. It's actually slightly worse in the United States, actually. One of the worst in the whole developed world. Don't tell me it's been underfunded. Don't tell me it's about funding. It's not, is it? It's not about funding. We fund that thing massively. To an absurd degree, it's funded. It's not like it's strapped for cash, particularly. I mean, it could always do with more. It's the type of thing that could always do with more. Just an endless, ravenous mouth. A gaping maw for cash. Endlessly. Okay, it could have more money. But don't tell me it's like crazily, stupidly underfunded and that's why patients die. No, we spend so much money on it that it will and is beginning to ruin us as a nation. That's how much. What is it, 200, 250 billion a year? Something insane like that. Something insane like that. So why is it? Why is it that the actual survival rates, because that's the ultimate litmus test, isn't it? That's the ultimate proof of the pudding. How well patients recover and survive after getting treatment from the NHS. Well, poorly. Why is that? Is it because it's massively mismanaged? There you go. It's probably one of the worst voice breaks I've had. Pardon me. My throat's still recovering from the live show. Oh, we did the live show, didn't we? I met a load of you guys there. The glorious band, The Chosen Few. Great people. It was a great evening. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. my voice was a bit wrecked yesterday. It's only sort of just recovering now. Might even hear it's a little bit croaky. Okay, the NHS. It's because it's mismanaged, isn't it? Badly mismanaged. And because a lot of the actual doctors and nurses are terribly trained people from the third world. Is that just a far-right fantasy? Is that just a bigoted, small-mind thing to say? No, you go to an NHS hospital and you'll find a first-generation Nigerian nurse who doesn't speak English perfectly or something. I think I'm making it up. Anyone that's used the NHS in the last 10, 15, 20 years knows exactly what I'm talking about. The doctor, someone from the Middle East or something, or Bangladesh or wherever. Oh, they botch 20% of all the operations they do. Mad. It's mad. Meanwhile, we've got so many young doctors and nurses that they all go, not all, a lot of them then can't get a job on the NHS. They have to go to Australia or something, or somewhere else in the world, because the quotas of diversity in the NHS have to be filled up by foreign people for some reason, for some insane reason. Because DEI, because, I don't know what. Horrible, isn't it? Horrible. Okay, let's move on. The eye paper, should we read a bit of the blurb? A bit of the blurb on the eye paper. Inflation warning for Britain as Trump threatens shipping blockade in revenge for failed peace talks. Okay, so all this over the weekend, haven't talked about it. Over the weekend, a whole bunch of stuff happened. JD Vance was dispatched to Islamabad in Pakistan for peace talks with the Iranians. They sent there that dude that's the speaker of the Iranian parliament. He seems like the de facto leader in some way. Well, it seems like, doesn't it? Who is the leader of Iran? They're still claiming they've got an Ayatollah, the old Ayatollah's son. Still hasn't been seen. Loads of reports is that he's sort of half blown up, isn't it? Missing a leg, in a coma, who knows what. He hasn't been seen. And beyond that, they've got their foreign minister, who, you know, released that statement about the ceasefire. And they've got the speaker of their parliament. Those two guys seem to be one way or another. It's probably, well, I'm sure it's a very, very low resolution view, what I just said there. There's probably loads more to it, but from what you can tell, they seem to be, between them in some senses, the de facto leaders when it comes to actual policy and things. They seem to be able to speak on behalf of the Iranian regime, at least. So in Islamabad, that guy and JD Vance sat down for like 20, 21 hours of talks. Didn't come to anything. It couldn't. They've both got lines in the sand, red lines, that the other could not, would not accept. So it came to nothing. What a surprise. Right, Iran saying Israel has to stop fighting Hezbollah in Lebanon. Netty's not going to do that. Simply not going to do that. I don't think, I might be wrong about this, but I don't think Trump and Rubio can make him. They could threaten to stop giving billions of dollars of military aid to Israel every single year, but they're not going to do that, are they? To please Iran. They're not going to do that, are they? So, okay. Iran wanted all the economic sanctions lifted off them. Don't think the State Department are prepared to do that, aren't they? Right? Iran wants just complete sovereign control of the Straits of Hormuz. Clearly, Trump is not going to have that. America and Israel, but America are insistent that Iran doesn't have any sort of program, domestic program, that can enrich uranium. Okay? Iran still, even now at this point, insisting that they must. They must be able to domestically, all on their own, enrich uranium. They say, don't they? They claim it's for peaceful purposes. It's for fuel in nuclear power plants and for, you know, like X-ray machines in hospitals and things. For years now, 10 years maybe, more, the rest of the world have said to Iran, look, if that's really true, if that's honestly true, you don't need weapons-grade enriched uranium, like 90%. You only need 20, 30, 40% enriched uranium for fuel and for X-ray machines and such other things, various other things. All sorts of various industry. If that's true, then we'll sell it to you. Russia's got a giant industry doing that. Russia will sell it to you and cut prices, give you a good deal. If that's all you need enriched uranium for, we'll sell it to you and you can stop enriching it for yourself and everyone's happy. We'll stop being worried that you're trying to make a nuclear bomb. Yeah? Deal? If you're being honest about it, deal? Yeah? And Iran have always said, nope. No deal. We want to be able to enrich our own uranium. It's not for a weapon. Then let us sell it. Let us sell you enriched uranium, which isn't weapons grade. No. So what other conclusions can you come to? So even now, at this point, right, you get the point. I'm labouring it a bit. At this point, still, Iran are insisting on that. So Trump was sent, not Trump, Vance was sent on an impossible task, right? They were never really going to be able to make a deal on most things. But now at least the Americans can say, look, we tried. We sent the Vice President of the United States, the highest level talks the United States and Iran have ever had since 1979. Ever. We, the Americans, pulled out all the stops. We sent the second most important man in the country to personally talk with you. And you threw it back in our faces. That's what the Americans are saying. Obviously, both sides accusing the other of negotiating in bad faith and da 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 da. But the politics of it, right, it does look like the Americans, the US, the White House can make the argument that we tried. And it's Iran that's rejecting it. It's Iran that is making this war go on. All right. So all that happened. J.D. Vance is now back. It collapsed, and so now it's on. Trump saying he doesn't. From this point on, he doesn't care if Iran want to talk anymore. I think is it on the ITV News? Yeah, there you go. On the ITV News, US to blockade ports, Iranian ports. As Trump says, he doesn't care if Iran returns to talks. He says he doesn't care now. He says, either way, we win. That's what he said. When people are like, what about talks? What about going forward? What about diplomacy? What now? What now? And he's like, I don't care about it. I don't care about that now. Don't care about any of that now. We win whatever happens, is his position at this point. The ITV News says, the blockade, which US Central Command said would be, quote, enforced impartially against vessels of all nations, quote, is due to begin today, 3 p.m. UK time. Okay. So there you go. It leaves options open now, I think. For if the US did want to occupy that Karg island, it puts that back on the table now, I imagine. Because if and when the US Navy open up the Strait of Hormuz, well, after that's swept of mines and is controlled entirely, physically, by the US Navy, then the whole Persian Gulf is open, so to speak. And onwards to Karg Island, which is right at the top, much nearer Kuwait than it is to the UAE. You know, you've probably all seen maps. All right. So will we get an appearance from the 82nd Airborne and the US Marine Corps after all? It's looking more likely to me. So, who knows? All right. Let's quickly read the front of the Eye paper. Inflation warning for Britain as Trump threatens shipping blockade in revenge for failed peace talks. Starmer refuses to take part in US action in Strait of Hormuz. Britain faces a dire new economic warning after Donald Trump announced he would block the world's most critical shipping lane in revenge for peace talks breaking down with Iran. After negotiations in Pakistan collapse, the US president says the US Navy will, quote, blockade any and all ships, quote, trying to enter or leave because Tehran, quote, is unwilling to give up its nuclear ambitions, end quote. I do think it's odd to me that at this stage Iran wouldn't give up their dream of enriching uranium for themselves. Do they not believe that the Pentagon will go all out? Do they still think they've got a chance of... I don't know. It seems crazy to me. If I was in their position, I would sort of concede that at this point. It seems like the main sticking point that Israel and the United States just cannot, will not give in on. That's their true red line, isn't it? That. Is it worth it? How are the Iranian regime not asking themselves? Is it worth it? Because even if they are able to strategically, quote unquote, win this war against the United States and Israel, i.e. their country is in rubble, but the regime itself is still in place, do they not think that somewhere down the line, 5, 10, 20 years from now, that something like this will happen again, even if it's just Israel on its own, to prevent them from enriching uranium? Some very, very powerful forces in the world seem hell-bent on preventing them from doing that. Do they not get it? Do they not? They obviously don't. I mean... Okay. The Eye paper continues saying, Chancellor to fly to Washington. Is that our Chancellor? Rachel Thieves, Rachel from Accounts. Chancellor to fly to Washington to help reopen channel. As Treasury says, this is not our war. The absurdity of that. So Rachel Reeves, a complete moron who nobody respects, a joke, a shorthand for Can you imagine Rachel Reeves going to the White House and trying to talk about international affairs? Crazy. It's like David Lammy as Foreign Secretary. Completely absurd. Someone who doesn't know really anything of any import. And they're supposed to be conducting affairs on the global stage. Barely anyone in their own party respects them or buys into the concept that they're a statesman. A stateswoman. With gravitas, with a great intellect, a towering intellect who knows what's going on. Nobody really in their own party buys that about Rachel Reeves, let alone in the wider country, let alone in the United States. Can I imagine most people in the United States like, who's this woman? She's the Chancellor of the Exchequer from Great Britain. Oh my God, what an embarrassment. What an embarrassment. Rachel Reeves with her stupid face going there, trying to talk about... It's just... mad. Mad to me. She's going to try and tell what State Department officials and generals, you need to open the Straits of Hormuz. They'll be like, go away. Get lost. Who are you? Oh, you are actually the Chancellor of the United Kingdom. Still. Be gone. Ugh. Ugh. Silly little woman. Stop LARPing as someone important. You're obviously not. I said it before, I think she's like underqualified to be the manager of a suburban Tesco. Laughable. It's a bad joke, though, isn't it? If it weren't so tragic, it would be laughable. Okay, and finally it says, Economists issue fresh warnings that inflation will rise as uncertainty over oil prices deepens, leaving UK households increasingly exposed to rising energy costs and interest rate shifts. Right, should we have a look at the price of oil? Ooh, it's just over $100 a barrel. Ooh. I shouldn't joke, really, because the price at the pump is super high. Okay, West Texas, ever so slightly higher than Brent. $104 a barrel right now for West Texas. $102 for Brent. So again, as I say all the time, just above that psychological, ultimately arbitrary, but that psychological barrier of $100. Nowhere near all-time highs. Sometimes it will go above $100 a barrel just not randomly, but sometimes it will pop above $100 a barrel here or there for no giant reason. There's no like massive conflagration like we've got in the Middle East, and it might make a tiny headline in the FT, like page 5. Ooh, noticed? Crude's gone over $100 a barrel. Nobody makes a great big deal out of it. But now, of course, they talk about it loads. Remember, it was about $78 a barrel when this thing started. So it's not like it was $40 a barrel and now it's $104. No, it was like $78. And now it's like $102, $104. So it's just unfair, isn't it? Really unfair, particularly for people that drive a diesel car. How much it is just at the pump now. Okay. Let's continue on. The Financial Times. Oh, so Hungary. Yeah, have we not talked about Hungary yet? We haven't even talked about Hungary, have we? So Hungary had a general election and Orbán lost. Viktor Orbán, who's been in power for like 16 years. He lost. Orbán's out. And you guy, Magyar, Peter, a guy called Peter Magyar, and his Tisza party. Interesting whether they'll be... They're described as conservative, with a small c, of course. Conservative and centre-right. But is he really? I think he's to the left of Orbán. And although he's conservative and centre-right, he's actually really pro-EU. Wants to have much, much, much closer ties with the EU. That's not very conservative or centre-right, is it? Apparently, he's saying they talk about how he's tougher on immigration, if anything, than Orbán. We'll see about that. How can you be both those things? How can you be really pro-EU and tougher on immigration than Viktor Orbán? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't add up, does it? To me. But we'll see. We'll see. Immigration over land. Not including aeroplanes and ships. But if you're just someone from Asia, wherever it is, Central Asia, the subcontinent of India, even in some ways from the Middle East and Arabia, or if you come round from North Africa up through the Levant into Europe, just simply overland, you quite often, a lot of those get funneled, just the way the geography is, mountains and things, and it's the way it's always been, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, you get funneled into Hungary. Towards the Hungarian plains. It's been the case for thousands of years. Many, 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 many migrations over the millennia from Asia into Europe. Going back to the Yamuna. Going back to various steppe peoples and Scythians. All the Mongol invasions. Very, very often all get funneled towards Hungary. So having Hungary as a stalwart against that, as some sort of cork in the bottle to some degree. Of course, there are other routes. It's not the only thing. Don't get me wrong. There are other routes, much more northerly routes and things. There's more than one way into the Balkans and stuff, but still. If he opens their borders, if Hungary goes full open border madness, it'll be a nightmare for all of Europe. It'll be terrible. It'll be ridiculous. So we'll see what he does. Some noises are saying that he's harder on immigration than Orban. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But that is in the news today. Viktor Orban is out. Viktor Orban was sort of pro, relatively anyway, not entirely, but pro-Russian, much more pro-Putin than he was pro-Zelensky. And I think this new guy is much more pro-Ukraine, pro-Zelensky. We'll see what he does. Apparently his manifestos or his platform or his all his policies are quite vague. You know how when before Starmer got into power, he didn't really have a massively fleshed out manifesto. It'll be deliberate. That'll be very deliberate. So you don't have to keep... one way to not keep all the promises, political promises you've made, is to not make them in the first place. Gives yourself a much more free hand when you're in government. It's difficult to win elections that way, but it can be done, of course. Look at Starmer. And this guy, apparently this guy's a similar thing. He hasn't got some sort of giant manifesto that he's going to try and stick to. No. You can just do what you please. So in other words, everyone has to just watch with bated breath. What's he going to do? Okay. Trump declares blockade on Hormuz after Iran talks fail to yield a peace deal. We've talked all about that, haven't we? Navy to halt toll-paying ships. The Americans really don't want ships paying millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to Iran every single day. They're not going to have that. Tehran speaks of mistrust. Yeah, both sides deeply mistrust each other, don't they? Fears for oil price. It's just over 100. Global economy dented. That's one way to characterise it, isn't it? All right, the Times, the venerable Times. Starmer seeks to adopt EU rules by using Henry VIII powers. Well, that's just one of the things they said, that Starmer wants to have much, much closer ties with the EU, particularly the single market, in terms of the single market. And instead of putting it through Parliament, because he may well fail to do that, there are various mechanisms, various ways you can get things through Parliament sometimes with extremely old powers, extremely old rules and laws, where you can sort of force things through sometimes. I mean, Henry VIII, obviously, is the 16th century, isn't it? Henry VIII ruled as something of an autocrat, not a true, true 100% autocrat. He had parliaments and things, but they were entirely under his thumb at various points. Used Thomas Cromwell sometimes to manipulate parliaments to just do exactly what he wanted. Harry. You think I haven't got long form content about Henry VIII and Thomas Cromwell? Of course I have. Check it out. It was £5 a month. Bronze tier membership. Loadseaters.com. All right, but at the point, at the moment, as I said earlier, it's still just sort of their plans they want to do. It's not sort of imminently going to become law or anything. Okay, there's Rosamund Pike. She got an award for something or other. She's an actress, so don't care. Trump, US blockade to end straight extortion. Navy, US Navy, quote, locked and loaded, quote, after peace talks founder. So I think it's looking more and more likely that there will be much more action, whether it's naval engagements or boots on the ground to a limited extent, even if it's only in some of the islands on the Iranian side of the Persian Gulf. Some actual boots on the ground, whether they're special forces operators or, you know, like the actual Marine Corps or the 82nd Airborne, whatever it is. I think the US Navy is going to go into action today. And then, again, who knows what at that point. Celebration of democracy as Hungary ousts Orban. Yeah, that's how Orban haters are characterising it. Even though Hungary has got democracy. He lost the vote and he conceded straight away when it was clear he'd lost the vote. The idea that there's no democracy in Hungary. Well, obviously there is. He was just ousted through a democratic process. But now they've got democracy back in Hungary. It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's stupid. It takes you for such a fool, doesn't it? All right, The Guardian. Ugh, The Guardian. Gross. Hungary enters new era as election ends Orbán's 16-year grip on power. Look, happy people in Hungary. Is it Budapest, isn't it? Budapest. Buda and Pest. Tizia party, that's the party of the new, or I think Tezia, I don't know really how you pronounce it, is set to take over after critical poll for Europe and Washington. Okay. UK could align with EU without MPs' scrutiny. Imagine if they did that. They used those so-called Henry VIII powers just to in all but name, draw us back into the single market. Imagine the betrayal of that. I wouldn't put it past them. Well, they're trying. They're going to try. They're going to try. I say I wouldn't put it past them. Well, they're already trying. Trump in threat to block straight after talks collapse. All right, we've done all that, haven't we? The Daily Mail, complete globalist slop, trying to pretend it's not, wearing the skin suit of something that isn't complete leftist, globalist, anti-British, anti-white slop, when that's exactly what it is. Labour plots to deny MPs vote on new EU sellout. Ministers want law change to sideline Parliament on Brussels deal. Great. Something about Meghan Markle, don't care. Okay, something about Justin Bieber, don't care, in the Metro. Government tackles oil crisis. Okay, what's this story really about? It's about deep fried foods in schools, because the Metro is completely unserious. You think I am unserious and Lotus Eaters is unserious? This is entirely unserious, isn't it? Complete rag. A socialist rag is what the Metro is. Globalist, traitorous rag. Government tackles oil crisis with ban on deep-fried foods in schools. Some schools, sometimes, have been serving kiddie-winks, chips, and, like, chicken nuggets. Got to stop that. Got to stop it. Can't have that. That's front page news. While the Middle East burns, that's front page news, according to them, according to the editors at the Metro. Okay, The Sun. Football. They're going with football. You know, was it Ryan Reynolds and that McElhenney fella who was in... It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I really like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, by the way. I think it's hilarious. They bought Wrexham and doing really well with them. I think Wrexham got knocked out of the FA Cup the other day or something or other, but they're actually doing really well. Wrexham was really crap. And after Ryan Reynolds and the Always Sunny fella bought them, pumped a bit of money into it, they're doing really well, punching above their weight now, Wrexham, which is good, cool. If you're a Wrexham fan, amazing, right? Okay, so... The Sun goes with, after Ryan Reynolds revitalised Wrexham, Snoop Dogg, the D-O-double-G, snapped up Swansea. Snoop Dogg bought Swansea Football Club. Ooh-wee. And Will Ferrell, lands Leeds. He hasn't bought Leeds just on his own. It's in part of a consortium and stuff, but anyway. And John Terry, remember John Terry? Played for Chelsea and England. He was England captain for a while. He buys United. Not Man United, though. Colchester United. There you go. That's important news now. That's important news. Snoop Dogg buying Swansea, though. That's interesting. All right, The Mirror. Trump, I'll block the straight. Okay, we've done it, haven't we? We've talked about that. Oh, Eamon Holmes had a stroke. He's not dead. He's in hospital, though. Exclusive, same old reform. So this is a story. Anything to declare Mr. Jenrick? He vows to cut flight tax after accepting £40,000 donation from airline owner. So what is it? The Mirror? The Mirror having a proper Jenrick there. Reforms Jenrick, who used to be Tory and let thousands and thousands of Afghans into our country without really telling anyone, sort of secretly. Who went on to commit loads, of course, have gone to commit loads of sex crime and murders. His name is Wayne Broadhurst, Robert. His name's Wayne Broadhurst. Well, now he's talking about, and he's like reforms, what, Treasury Treasury spokesperson, that's his title. Reform UK's Treasury spokesperson, talking about cutting, wants to make flights cheaper for ordinary people. It's all about acting in the interest of the normal people and making holidays a little bit cheaper for people. He's a good guy, right? Also, though, took 40 grand off the companies that will most benefit from that. All right. The Daily Express, so it's a good paper. As nurse suspended for misgendering paedophile gets payout, campaigners say the NHS needs to cure itself of its gender madness. Another picture of Rosamund Pike there. Okay. So this nurse, this is a quick story, a nurse called a man he. Right? A paedophile. I think convicted paedophile. A transgender paedophile, so a man claiming to be a woman, is also a sex criminal. The nurse called him he. And the nurse got in trouble for that and fired briefly, or, you know, put on leave. And after there was some sort of tribunal to find out exactly everything that happened, she's been reinstated. They decided she hasn't done anything wrong, after all. So why was she put on leave in the first place? They decided she's not on leave anymore, she's got her job back. And that they've got to pay her loads of money, an undisclosed amount of money. So in other words, the NHS, the gender weirdos, like the progressives, somewhere in the management of that particular hospital, did entirely the wrong thing, the mad thing. And so anyway, she's vindicated, surely. Surely at this point, she's completely vindicated. And the Express say the NHS need to cure itself of its gender madness. Yeah, the whole of society needs to cure itself of any sort of gender madness. I think we're largely there, aren't we? I think we're largely over that hump, I like to think. The idea that just a transvestite, let's not call them transgender. Transgender is someone that's actually got an intersex condition or something, isn't it? No, just a man that just puts on some women's clothing. That's a transvestite, isn't it? It's not transgender, it's a transvestite. Like Eddie Izzard. Not transgender, is he? It's a transvestite. The man who enjoys wearing women's clothes. That's all that is. So I'm not going to call you by your female name. No. I'm not going to call you she or they. You're he. Aren't you? Every chromosome in your body tells us scientifically that you're a he. So there you go. Yeah. All right, and the Daily Star, is that the last one? Yeah, this is the last one for today. The Daily Star, what are they talking about? Oh, Eamon Holmes is stroke. Fine. All right, that's the front pages. Should we have a look at our poll? We did a poll, didn't we, today? All right, let's have a look at our poll. We asked you guys, just shy of 1,300 votes there. Not a bad cross-section. We asked you, will the US blockade bring Iran to its knees? 20% of you say yes, 59% of you say no, so clear win for the no vote, and what, 21% of you say maybe. Decent chunk of maybe, that is, isn't it? Decent chunk of maybe. Still, clear win for the no vote. Yeah, I mean, who knows, I would have clicked no or maybe myself on that one. It might do. It may well do. I don't think the people that have clicked yes, just clicked down to 19% of you. I don't think you're completely insane. I'm not going to ask you to get out or anything. You may well be right. This may be one of the last things that truly topples that Iranian regime. After the US Navy enters the Persian Gulf entirely, takes out Karg Island and whatever. It might be. I don't think it is. I wouldn't put money on it. But it might be. It just might be the thing that finally sort of helps to crumble the regime entirely. We shall see. All right. That was the vote. Should we have a quick look at the websites? It's actually already 10-2. So should we have a quick look at the websites? What have we got? There was something on the mail. Oh, Rory McIlroy won the Masters back-to-back. Only a few people in history have ever done that. Back to back. all right, only people who care about golf will care about that. This story, Britain's population would skyrocket by 4.4 million under the Green Party. It may well even be more than that. Zach Polansky, real name Dave Paulden, is an insane person, an insane subversive who means to speed run us off a cliff if he was in power. Absolutely insane person, in my opinion. His policies are mental. Mental. Anyone that wants the best for this country wouldn't dream of voting Green. Wouldn't dream of it. It's not about environmentalism anymore. Anyone out there watching this that thinks the Green Party is about environmentalism, wake up. Wake up. Come on. It's about communism and Islamism. Some weird, disgusting nexus of Islamism and communism. It's not about solar panels. It's not about putting your rubbish in the right bin. Right? Wake up. God's sake. Madness. All right. In the Express, something about the boys' race. Fury as every UK household faces £20,000 a Boris wave disaster bill. That all the people that Boris let in during the Boris wave, the millions of people, while he put you under house arrest and said you can't go visit granny, you can only go to the park for a little bit of exercise 1 hour a day like you're an actual prisoner, and even then you've got to wear a mask. Boris Johnson, arch traitor, first person in the dock in Bowes Britain to answer for his treason. We're told that over the next few decades, while all the people he let in live out their lives in Britain, will cost taxpayers, what is it, way over 600 billion. That's, in other words, a cost of something like £20,000 each. The crime that Boris Johnson committed during COVID and the Boris wave and in Ukraine, etc. This person, Boris Johnson, anyone out there, and you do see one or two on Twitter still defending him, wanting him back. Honestly, he would be first arrested and put on trial for crimes against the people, for crimes against the nation. A monster. I think Boris Johnson's something of a monster. Makes me sick. He'll probably get away with it for his whole life, live out his life at liberty for the rest of his life. Almost certainly, I would have thought. Not if I would have anything to say with it. Not if I was Lord Protector. All right, The Sun. Here's another story. It's interesting. Chagos U-turn. Britain was going to give away the Chagos Islands. And one way or another, the Americans put the kibosh on it. We had to get sort of formal legal acceptance from the State Department, from the US, because they've got a giant base on that island, Diego Garcia. The base is Diego Garcia. The Americans had to sign off on it and say, okay, all right, we formally are going to let you, the United Kingdom, give sovereignty of the Chagos Archipelago Islands to Mauritius. And America refused to do that. And there's not enough time left in this parliament to sort all of that out. And it looks like Starmer's government in the next parliament, later in the year, this year, after sort of their summer break, spring break, doesn't look like they're going to bring it up again. So it might just be all over. We're just not going to give away the Chagos Islands. Mauritius might then take us to court because we signed something with them like 18 months ago or 2 years ago. They might take us to court and get all annoyed about it, but looks like it may not happen after all. After everything. All right, it's already 5-2, and I'd like to do a little bit of This Day in History and, of course, the Rumble Rants and Super Chat. So let's just move straight on This Day in History. Down through the centuries, what happened on This Day in History of note? I like ending the show with that. You guys seem to like it. All right, what have we got? On this day, the 13th of April, in the year 1250, the Seventh Crusade is defeated in Egypt, and King Louis IX of France is captured. Interesting. All the Crusades after the Third Crusade, we could argue, were failures. Well, the Fourth Crusade depending on how you measure it. Certainly, the 7th and 8th Crusade were absolute failures. King Louis the 9th of France wanted to go and retake Jerusalem or shore up the Crusader kingdoms in the Levant. Failed. Got himself defeated and captured by the Muslims in Egypt. That had been a strategy for a long time. Invade Egypt first, take out all of Egypt, and then move north. So you haven't got any sort of Muslim armies behind you. But he got defeated in Egypt straight away. Well, not straight away, but very quickly. Got himself ransomed. Got himself out of captivity quite quickly. Stayed in the Holy Land for a while, a few more years. Eventually went back to France. Eventually launched the 8th Crusade, which was also an abject failure. Well, also bit of a failure. Okay, on this day in 1598, the Edict of Nantes grants the political rights to French Huguenots. So this is what Henry IV of France, not Henry Bolingbroke, not Henry IV of England, Henry IV of France, the wars of religion in Europe, the wars of religion in France in the 16th century. Protestants fighting Catholics. And he was raised a Catholic, but was sympathetic to Protestants and tried to end, or did sort of end, the wars of religion, kind of. Well, actually, not really, but anyway. He was like a conciliator type. So he makes Catholicism the full religion of France, sort of undisputedly, but also gives, well, as you say, gives political rights to the Huguenots, trying to end the wars of religion, and does at least for a bit, to a limited extent. Eventually assassinated by Catholics. Henry IV of France, very, very important, very, very interesting figure. Talk all about it on Epochs. At least a bit. Okay. On this day in 1860, the first Pony Express rider reaches Sacramento in California. Talked all about this before, didn't I, one time? When a few weeks back, this website talked about how the Pony Express is first started. Well, one of their riders, a few weeks later, gets out all the way out to California, heading out California way. For some reason, the people that compile this stuff on this particular website, on this day in history, they're interested in the Pony Express. Don't blame them, it's an interesting thing. Okay, on this day in 1868, the Abyssinian War ends as British and Indian troops capture Magdala, the hill fort of Magdala, and Ethiopian Emperor Theodoros II commits suicide. You might think, oh, evil British colonialists land grabbing in Ethiopia just because they wanted to. Just because some gentleman at White's twiddling their moustache in pure evil wanted to invade Ethiopia. No. That emperor of Ethiopia kidnapped loads of our missionaries and government officials to extort us into helping him fight loads of wars that he was embroiled in. And we had to go there. We sent them. We didn't have to, but the decision was made we'd go there and rescue them. It was basically a giant rescue mission, really, is what it was. Of course, we defeat him because they're no good at war at that point. And we were great at war at that point. So, yeah. Led by Napier. Was it Charles Napier or... I'm not sure if it's actually Charles Napier. Anyway. Got a whole epoch all about the life and career of Charles Napier, if you're interested in that. Oh, yeah. It's all there. Okay. On this day in 1970, Apollo 13 announces, "Okay, Houston, we have a problem here," after one of their oxygen tanks explodes. Fascinating stuff, if you believe any of it's real. I watched a video not that long ago, funnily enough, about that. Probably about 2 months ago, I found a really long-form video on YouTube where someone was going through nearly all the audio communications between Apollo 13 and Houston. A lot of them, probably not all of them, a lot of them are recorded and saved, and you can listen to them. And they went through them like with a fine-tooth comb from launch all the way back to just telling the whole story of Apollo 13, the real, real story, in extremely long-form detail. Fascinated by that. Had that in the background while I was doing chores. Great stuff. Great listen. Okay. That's the main part of the show. It's just past 9 a.m. Shall we do the Rumble Rants and Super Chats? We should do that, shouldn't we? All right, let's have a look at... Let me do this so I can see the left-hand side of my screen. All right, we've got the Rumble Rants first. Global Church History in at number one, still reigning, defending, undisputed champion of Rumble Rants. In at number one says, today in 585, Prince St. Hermenegild was martyred by King Leovigild the Visigoth. I don't know anything about that. I'm sorry, you've out-history-broed me there, bro. Deep in the Dark Ages. Scandinavian history, deep in the Dark Ages. That's too obscure for me, I'm afraid. I can't make comment on that. I'll try and look it up, though. Sounds interesting. Maybe probably should know about it. Okay, on this day, 1204, the Fourth Crusade took Constantinople. More than once, it's one of the few topics I've returned to on Epochs, the Fourth Crusade. Twice, long-form content, various aspects and things, all about the Fourth Crusade. Very, very, very pivotal thing. When Constantinople was first really destroyed by Christian knights, largely. The final fall of Constantinople, isn't it? 1453. By Mehmed the Conqueror, Mehmed II, the Ottoman. But it was massively, massively weakened. First burnt down, the whole city, well, not the whole city, most of the city completely destroyed and burnt down in 1204, but in the Fourth Crusade. Absolutely pivotal thing in history. Covered on Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. More than once. Cool. All right. Oh, you also say, on this day in 1640, the Short Parliament began. That's the one where Charles Stuart, opened a parliament to get more money. Almost immediately realised that they weren't going to give him loads more money unless he granted them loads and loads and loads of power. So he just shut it down. Shut it down. We'll try and make do without then. But, you know, John Pym, various people. He'd opened Pandora's box, though. Okay, the Short Parliament. Fascinating stuff. I'll get into all of that in as much detail as I can muster, really, when I get up to the Civil War period. In Epochs. Trust me, bro. Gonna do it in stupid detail. Love it. I love it. Clarendon. I'm gonna be reading largely from Clarendon. Okay. On this day in 1829, George the Fourth, that's the Prince Regent, Prinny, signed the Catholic Emancipation. Right. I.e., the Catholics. In Ireland as well. Well, there's so much to it. I can't even begin to go into it. It's not a history show. Okay. For T and Barber. Morning, Bo. Hopefully a good one ahead. Is there much chance of Lotus Eaters Live going on tour? I doubt it. I probably... Well, tour in Britain. Somewhere else in Britain. Maybe London. But not abroad. I met you, didn't I, out there? So it was nice to shake your hand. Shame about Orban. Looks like they're about to have a little shock for a bit. Successful Artemis mined. Oh yeah, Artemis landed safely in the ocean. Exactly where it was supposed to. The heat shields held. And they're back. They're all safe, back alive. If you believe they went to the moon. They're all back safe. Well, they're certainly all back safe. That's a matter of fact. Whether they went anywhere or somewhere else. Something else. Of course, I believe they do. But a fair amount if you don't. Okay. Yeah, it was nice to meet you. For T and Barber. Yeah, going on tour, I mean... There will be more, I'm pretty sure. Hopefully there will be more. That's the idea, to do more Lotus Eaters Live events. Like one a year, maybe slightly more than one a year. I don't know. I've got nothing to do with that. I just turn up on the night and talk. I really have nothing to do with the organisation. But it is difficult and it does cost a lot. The overheads are way more big than people think. Okay, but hopefully there will be more. Maybe in London. I mean, London's the obvious thing. If you need numbers. Otherwise, you don't make any money and then you can't do it again. And maybe London. Maybe more in that exact same theatre in Swindon. I don't want to speak for Carl, but I think he likes the idea of that. Because the logistics of it are already difficult. So to make that as least difficult as possible... I'm getting a thumbs up about what I'm saying in real time from people that know, from people what they're talking about. Okay, so there you go. if you want to come to a live event, start getting in the mindset that you might have to travel to Wiltshire and Swindon. Okay. Apologies for my slightly ripped throat vocal cords this morning. All right. That's a Random Name says... I met you as well, didn't I? Didn't I? Yeah. That's a Random Name says... In the Swindon station, waiting for a train to Paddington. Oh, like you're saying that right now. That you're in the Swindon station, waiting for a train to Paddington. Holy F, the train tickets are expensive. Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. You could literally get an aeroplane to Turkey and back for less. Well, nearly. It's in that ballpark. I had to sell an effing kidney to get on. Crying face. Yeah. He's not joking. It's mad. It's sort of mad how much it is. If it's not super off-peak, if it's just, you know, like rush hour times. Yeah, it's stupid money. Doesn't make sense. How could it possibly cost that much to go from Swindon to London, if anyone doesn't know? Not a fantastic distance. 50, 55 minutes, an hour on the train. Not a super fast bullet train. It's not that far in the scheme of things. Fallen Firebird says, Louis the VII is the ultimate aura loss. He gets defeated, captured, and then subsequently Eleanor of Aquitaine leaves him for Chad, Richard the Lionheart, who frame mogs him permanently. Truly embarrassing. So she left him for Richard the Lionheart's father, Henry the Second. Richard the Lionheart is her son. Okay. But do you honestly think I haven't got loads of long form content about the Second Crusade? A whole one all about Eleanor of Aquitaine on her own. One all about Henry II. More than one all about Richard the Lionheart and his brother John. One all about William Marshall. One all about Thomas Becket. Oh, yeah, it's all there. It's all there. Hours and hours and hours and hours talking about that generation of Louis the VII and Eleanor of Aquitaine and Henry II and Richard the Lionheart. It's all there. All right, Fallen Firebird again says, oh, you've corrected yourself. Your next Rumble Rant says, I meant Henry the II, Beau. Cool. I have historically embarrassed myself there and suffered aura loss. Don't worry about it, bro. Don't worry about it. Please forgive my sheer foolishness. You're forgiven. You're forgiven. Okay. All right, that's the last one, bro. Let's do the Super Chats. Harry, you have to bring up the YouTube Super Chats for me, if you would. He's just doing that now. Engage. All right, here they are. There's quite a few. I'll have to whip through them a bit, if you don't mind. Can't help myself making comment, though, can I? Sort of can't help myself, if it's interesting and stuff. But I'll need to whip through them a little bit here. All right, let's start at the top. Pixel Rick. I'm Pixel Rick, says... Arsenal bottle, Tottenham going down, a Hammer's dream. Okay, yeah, it's football. Yeah, I don't even remember exactly what happened. Is it that Chelsea are closing in on Arsenal for the title? Imagine if Tottenham went down. Oh, that'd be so good. I wouldn't be able to stop myself talking about it a little bit and gloating about it if Tottenham went down. I know most people watch this and not into football, but I'd at least mention it. And I think gloating is a bad look. I try not to do it hardly ever. Sometimes you can't help yourself, can you? But I would just lean into it for a couple of minutes if that happened. Unapologetically. Anyone who's not a Tottenham supporter hates Tottenham. Yeah? Okay. Erwin Romulus, I met you. I met you at the live event, for sure, because that's a very memorable name. So, Erwin Romulus, nice to meet you, sir. Thank you for the 10 quid there. You say, morning, Beau. What a belter of a night Saturday was. I walked in fairly optimistic about the future of this country, and I walked out confident that we can win. Yeah. Aim higher, vote low, millions must go, from Zoomers to Boomers. It's the best option. It's the best option. So, yeah. The momentum is with us. I do believe that. A large chunk of the electorate have felt themselves completely disenchanted, disenfranchised. And now there's some sort of option, genuine option for them with Restore. Not Reform, not like Matt Goodwin, not like some sort of Nadim Zahawi, Suella Breverman, weird Tories 2.0. Tons and tons of foreign people, fifth columnists in their ranks. Don't want Zia Youssef as a Home Secretary. Ugh, I may as well stay at home. Well, now you've got Restore. Okay, good. Brandon Lucas says, interestingly, this is the case where Hegseth is uncharacteristically correct on the terms. Iran's strategic arsenal is reportedly reduced by 90%. Oh, you're saying that Pete Hegseth meant the inverse of decimation? Not that he's taken out 10%, but that there's only 10% left. Okay, that would make much more sense. But that's not what it means. For something to be decimated is that you've taken out 10% of it. That's what that means. But if he meant the sort of the opposite of that, the inverse of that, then okay, that would make sense. Fair enough. Erwin Romulus again says, it was an honour and a privilege to meet you, to meet your fine self and all the other patriots in attendance. By God's will, we'll have our home again. Yes, lovely sentiment. Absolutely lovely sentiment. It was very nice to meet you. Great sentiment, yes. Optimism. None of this doomer nonsense. Can't stand doomers. Doomerism. Ugh. Is there anything lamer than being a doomer? Absolutely despicable. Not just be a doomer in and of yourself, in your own heart and mind, but you spread it out to everyone you know. Spread it all over the internet, all over Twitter. Revolting. Revolting. All right, Brendan Lucas again says, since 97, private healthcare expenditure, has doubled from 24% of health to 46%, with critical intervention moving from 600,000 in 2016 to 1 million now. Right, yeah. The NHS isn't particularly underfunded. That's one thing they would always say, or will always say, oh, we just need to throw more money at it. It doesn't seem to be the case. It's not necessarily one of those things where you just throw more money at it and now it all works perfectly. It doesn't seem to be the case, does it? Okay, Brendan Lucas again for another $20. Cheers, appreciate that. Very generous. Say, ironically, three of the ugly ducklings of the USN considered failures, namely independence, liberty, and Zumwalt classes, have the best draft. Oh, you're talking about ships. You're talking about ships. The US Navy. Okay. Different classes of ships. Okay. They have the best draft and best speed to actually escort ships through the straits and not to be hit by mines. Cool. Very interesting. You seem to know your stuff. Seems absolutely you know your stuff. So I'll just accept everything you've said there. Yeah, we'll see how it goes down. I think there will be action today. By the end of today, British time, by lunchtime, American time, Eastern time, we may well be seeing footage and images of US Navy ships getting hit by something. We may not. But if such images were to come out, it might be now, around now, today. We'll see. You can only imagine that the Americans are going to do everything in their power, of course, to prevent any of their ships from getting hit. Have the skies full of countermeasures. Okay. Brendan Lucas says, after being effectively banned by Orban, EU NGOs that no one can ever vote for will return to Hungary and never leave and quietly influence Hungarian civil society. What a great day for democracy. Yeah. The last sentence there is obviously sarcastic. What a great day for democracy. Yeah. Yeah, once the EU gets its tentacles into you, it's difficult to remove them. Good point. The K-Man Live says, proper gutted, I couldn't make it Saturday. We'll have other ones. Will you guys do another live? Maybe even up north for fans like me. Who knows? It's not entirely up to me. It would be probably quite difficult to do one other than either Swindon or London or somewhere else in the south. Probably quite difficult. Okay. But maybe, who knows? Who knows? If they become sort of a roaring success and we can be guaranteed... Anyway, it's not up to me. I don't make any of those sorts of decisions. Okay. Kirch's top guy says... Well, it's fantastic to meet you and the lads on Saturday, Bo. Thanks for signing my copy of Meditations. Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. Hope to catch the next one when it happens. Cool. Yeah. Hopefully too. Nice to meet you. Brendan Lucas says, the argument for the failure of democracy in Hungary is that Orbán controlled the media and the courts, but prior to this day, Hungarians could access more of the internet than UK residents could. Interesting. I wonder. Okay. I wonder to what extent Orbán did control media and the courts. I don't know about Hungarian civil society in fantastic detail. I just don't. But interesting what you say there, nonetheless. Brendan Lucas says, also for the pro-EU crowd, it's a bit of a low resolution that if we rejoin, we'll keep out of Schengen and Euro. UK is so in debt that joining Euro will frankly end the country. People are nuts. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it's not in our interest to join, to have the Euro. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Azzy0161 says, hi Bo, unfortunately I can't watch your show most mornings because I work in the office and my boss is a lefty, lol. Anyway, love your show, mate. Thank you, sir. Other than I confused Eamon Holmes and Hugh Edwards this morning. Oof, that's going to annoy me all day. All right, let's see what else we got. There's still quite a fair few more to get through. Verulg231 says, probably already mentioned a while back, but did you see that ITV is making an Elizabeth the First show? Apparently they're going to have a trans play her, unless that was a bad April Fool's joke. Love Epochs. Well, thank you for loving Epochs. It's great. Thank you for loving Epochs. And we're used to now the revisionism in history. Like, to make Isaac Newton an Indian man or something. They did that in Doctor Who, didn't they? Or they'll make Margaret of Anjou a black woman. Or whatever. Yeah. Or what, they'll make Henry VIII a black dude in a wheelchair. That's not made up, is it, either, I think. Anyway. The idea that they might make Elizabeth the First a trans person. Why not? If you've already got absolute no respect for history or heritage or the truth or anything like that, everything's just an exercise in progressive subversion, then why not? Okay, Mr. Dickie Bingo, met you as well. It was a pleasure to shake your hand. Mr. Dickie Bingo, not Dinky Bingo. What's a nice drive from Wolves to Swindon? What, Wolverhampton? Yeah, some of the countryside up there. Whenever I've been up there on the train, some of the countryside out the window. Lovely. Lovely. It was a pleasure to meet you, sir. Okay, Azzy again says, let's have a white pill. Where's your favourite place to visit in merry old England or Britain? For me, I love Ely Cathedral. It's a masterpiece, in my opinion. Ely Cathedral is lovely. Lots of the cathedrals are wonderful. I mean, what's my favourite place? There's a number of places. I personally think that Westminster Abbey, in the middle of London, literally across the road from Westminster Palace and the Houses of Parliament. For me, Westminster Abbey is the heart of England. But then there's loads of places. There's loads of places that aren't necessarily historical. They're just like the Lake District, the Peak District, various parts of the coast, even parts of the coast in East Anglia and Essex and Kent. Lots of the South Coast. Places in Devon and Cornwall, absolutely lovely. The Brecon Beacons in Wales, the Cairngorms, the Scottish Highlands, remarkable, unbelievable scenery. But then there's all sorts of history places, aren't there? Like various cathedrals or something. Visiting Stonehenge, Salisbury Plain. There's a million and one things. I think the most remarkable space I've ever been in is Westminster Abbey. Been there, obviously, many times. It's still remarkable to me. Westminster Abbey, nothing comes close. St. Paul's Cathedral, get real. St. Paul's Cathedral is a Johnny-come-lately nothing burger compared to Westminster Abbey. Okay. Last couple here. Lammy is my kang. Morning, buddy. Said, sorry I couldn't make the live event. Don't worry about it. Maybe next time. Didn't get there in time. See you at the next one. Yeah, it'd be nice to meet you and shake your hand. Lammy is my kang. Big fan of the Bow Show. And the final one this morning is Brandon Lucas. Hugh and Eamon are both awkward Celtic boomers. But that's not enough. Get the Lotus Legal checkbook out. Oh, yeah. I do completely retract it all. Sorry, Eamon Holmes. I know you didn't do anything wrong. I know. I got you and Hugh Edwards mixed up. Sorry. Bit of a bad error, isn't it, to be perfectly honest? But I think people get it. You can't be perfect. What is this, like the 70th Bow Show? Something like that. So where they go over an hour, I've made like well over 70 hours worth of content here. Maybe 80, 90 hours worth of content. And trying to make one massive blooper like that. Proper blooper. It's not too bad. You go and talk for 80 hours and see if you make one blooper. Anyway, again, sorry, Eamon. I do genuinely apologise. You got it wrong. What can you do? Right. And on top of all that, I hope he's all right. There's various degrees of having a stroke, aren't there? Some are minor, some are terrible. So I hope it's not. I hope it's not too bad of a one. All right. Well, on that bombshell, that's the show today. It's just ticked 25 minutes past 9 in the AM, British summertime, on Monday the 13th of April in the year of our Lord 2026. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. You're the best among us. Try and make the best of the day ahead. Carpe diem, seize the day, if you can. I know it's not always easy when you've got lots of responsibilities. But if you can, try and do something valuable with your time. You'll never get it back. It's the most valuable thing you've got is your time. Try and make it count. All right, without getting too preachy about it. Until tomorrow morning, take care.